I think a lot of people think CRO, you know, is actually increasing the conversion rate. And I think, you know, the acronym is actually a terrible acronym because what it says is conversion rate optimization. Mm-hmm. The truth is, you know, when we do conversion optimization, and, you know, this is why I also say we do conversion optimization and not conversion rate optimization, we're optimizing for more revenue. We try to improve websites so you make more money, not necessarily increase the conversion rate by itself.
Welcome to the Winning E-Commerce Experience Show, where it's all about creating a brand that your customers love so they keep coming back. This show is brought to you by DataQ. Your store experience begins with your homepage. DataQ improves your conversion rate up to 30% by showing each visitor a personalized homepage based on their interest. And now, your host, Sharam Anver.
Hey guys, today we have the founder of Splitbase, a landing page and conversion optimization agency for e-commerce brands. Rafael Paul Indegel, great to have you with us.
Yeah, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So you were just talking about how you're in Montreal right now. And, you know, things are, I guess, you're in the home of Shopify. So it's almost like the home of like the new e-commerce behemoth, right? So how's that going over there?
Yeah, it's good. It's a very vibrant city. Lots of creative people. Maybe not as vibrant right now with the coronavirus, but in general, you know, it's an incredible city for creativity, really.
Yeah, it's Canada's, you know, one of those countries I've got two really good friends from there, and it's some place I really, really wanted to visit. Hopefully I managed to make the trip at some point. I've heard quite a bit that like you guys have this amazing outdoors, right? I guess similar to the US.
Definitely. I mean, during summer, it is fantastic out here. I'm really not a big fan of winter, but when it comes to summer, it's just gorgeous.
You know, but that's the one thing which really gets me because, like, I mean, you can see from my face, I'm a tropical dude, right? So I do not do well in winter. And you guys get some pretty crazy winters out there, right?
Oh, we do. We do, unfortunately.
So tell us, Rafael, tell us about Splitbase. Tell us, like, why you started it and, you know, what, you know, basically, like, what was the motivation behind it?
Yeah, you see, around 6 or 7 years ago is when I got into conversion optimization. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the birth of Splitbase just yet. I did a lot of freelancing and digital marketing consulting on the side before starting Splitbase. But I loved like anything digital marketing and would write about the topic, would, you know, do some stuff for clients here and there. And I wasn't really sure what I liked the most in digital marketing until I discovered conversion optimization and realized, and I wasn't sure like exactly what really made me so into it, but I loved the fact that, you know, you could have something and just improve it and make it better. And I would just keep obsessing over that when working on clients or work on my own projects. I had a small consulting startup at the time that was like a online marketplace for consultants. That was probably like 8 years ago or something. Mm-hmm. It didn't work out. You know, first failed startup, fantastic. But I was obsessing and liking doing CRO almost more than like anything else, really. And over the years, you know, I went into Bitcoin a little bit, and then I went back to conversion optimization, eventually created Splitbase. There's just something for me where when you have a lot of data and mm-hmm. you can really look at all the different avenues, analyze the patterns and try to optimize that, there's just something really appealing to me, you know, with that. And even more than starting something from scratch, right? Which is where we mostly work with established companies.
It's like, especially when I look at this term CRO, I have this feeling, at least from the questions I keep getting, that it's a very, like, very, it's not a very understood term. I think people definitely have seen it quite a bit. No. I mean, people are just sort of getting the hang of what terms like SEO and AdWords are. But I correct me if I'm wrong, but I get the sense that people, like CRO is that thing which people feel like they really need, but they have no idea what it is. So maybe it might be nice to get into like a bit of a definition, like, you know, for everyone listening in where people are thinking about CRO, how to improve conversion rate. What does that look like?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think let's start with a misconception. I think a lot of people think CRO, you know, is actually increasing the conversion rate. And I think, you know, the acronym is actually a terrible acronym, because what it says is conversion rate optimization. Mm-hmm. The truth is, you know, when we do conversion optimization, and, you know, this is why I also say we do conversion optimization and not conversion rate optimization, we're optimizing for more revenue. We try to improve websites so you make more money, not necessarily increase the conversion rate by itself, because you could slash your prices in half, double your conversion rate, but you're still not making more money, right? And then what's the point? Mm-hmm. So what we're really doing is we're optimizing for conversions, whatever that is, right? We're optimizing for that KPI and that key metric. I think a lot of people think it's just A/B testing. It's really not. A/B testing is something we do to, you know, validate different decisions. But conversion optimization at the end of the day is really looking at data, looking at how are people navigating on your website? What do they want? What do they need? And how can we shape the experience so it better fills their needs and wants? You know, it's actually as simple as that, as a definition. The execution is where it gets complicated, but
exactly. And I think that's where it gets, where the definition gets so muddly, right? Because then you can have all kinds of people talking about CRO, but I suppose that's what really sets apart like people who are really good at it, you know, like yourselves, versus maybe people who sort of claim to do it, because the definition is so broad that it can admit almost any kind of work. Like I could do like a really small test and call myself a CRO specialist when maybe that's not the case, right?
I mean, look, there's a lot of agencies that do, you know, Facebook ads or just digital marketing that say they do CRO. You know, and we've trained some of those agencies. They came to us because they realized they were selling it for a while and yet they have no idea what they're doing. All they're doing is just setting up an A/B test for any random thing on a website and telling their clients they're doing CRO.
Right.
Right. So I think all these little things, or like blog posts, if you look, you know, how to do conversion optimization on Google, most blog posts you're going to see is like 20 A/B testing ideas that you should do. Truth is, you probably shouldn't test those things. It's probably not relevant to your business, not relevant to your goals. You know, so I think all these little things here and there contributed to creating the wrong image of what conversion optimization is.
You know, when I look at conversion rate optimization, I really like to repeat that first point you made, because I didn't really think about that. But the, you know, when you said that this isn't just about improving your conversion rate, this is sort of like a pet peeve that I have, because people get really thrown off by the difference between a relative number and absolute number, right? Like, it's so cool that you said that. Like, you know, if I'm spending, if I'm making, I don't know, 100K a month with a conversion rate of 1%, and now I improve conversion rate to 3%, and I'm now making 50K, did I really improve my business by three times? No, I didn't.
Yeah.
Right. So hopefully, like, you know, everyone listening in, I really hope you take that lesson into ground, because whenever you're looking at numbers, I don't know, Rafael, like, feel free to jump in, but you need to look at both those metrics, like the comparative number, which is the percentage, which is your conversion rate, but then you also have to look at the absolute, which is your sales.
Yep, 100%.
So we've sort of cleared up that sort of, maybe let's say that misnomer, but. Let's jump into some of these topics with CRO. And I think probably the most, I mean, this is another pet peeve of mine, so forgive me if I go off on a rant, but I think A/B testing gets a lot of press, right? Like, I mean, I can't even remember, but that was the story about how Google changed the color of some of their buttons and improved conversion rate. And like one of my pet peeves is that like everybody reads these sort of like these articles which these ginormous companies are doing and just expect that they can do the same. How would you look at A/B testing for sort of like small, medium, or even large like e-commerce companies? Where does it make sense? And what specific things would you be testing? I mean, you're not looking at colors of buttons, right?
Right. That's the thing. So I think when should you be doing A/B testing is, it's a hard question to answer because there's no like magic number. I like to use a guideline of, you know, if a brand has less than 1,000 transactions a month, mm-hmm. it's going to be hard to be doing any type of A/B testing because you need a lot of data to really A/B test efficiently. And, you know, you might be able to run a test at 500 transactions, probably going to work, but you're also going to be limited to what you can test. You need to have enough conversions to go through whatever you're testing to have a statistically valid test. Mm. So, you know, the more data, the better it is, right? It's gonna allow you to test. So smaller, I think one of the issues, and I look at like, you know, all the companies that reach out to us to help with CRO, you know, on a daily basis, and most of them are so small, they shouldn't even bother with A/B testing. Mm. And I think, you know, people are overthinking, oh, what should I A/B test? Should I do this? And, you know, if you're getting a few transactions a day or a week in some cases, you know, A/B testing is the last thing you should think about. Focus on getting traffic first, right?
And the reason I want to still linger on this point a little bit because I think that point is heard quite a bit, like don't do it. But I think what I'd really like to hear more about is why. Right. And one of the things is like, at least for me, is that it's actually dangerous to do A/B testing when your sample size is low because it could give you the wrong information. Right. So, you know, maybe we can just jump into that a little bit because I don't want people listening in to think, you know what, like who says my brand is too small? Like it can't be it's actually not that you shouldn't be doing it because you've got better things to do. It's also that like it could take you down the wrong route, which is so dangerous.
100%. Well, so I think the easiest way to put it is at the end of the day, A/B testing is math. It's a scientific way to test whether a decision should be implemented or should not be implemented, right? And it also gives you learnings on how people are navigating on a website. If you don't have enough transactions, meaning you don't have the required sample size to fulfill, you know, what makes an A/B test statistically valid, you could have your A/B test or your testing tool say that version A of your homepage is the winner. Great. My A/B testing tool tells me it's the winner. It looks fantastic. But if you've had like 3 transactions, you know, on that variant and then 10 on the other variant, the issue is that a few more transactions and the other variant could be the winner. Right? Mm-hmm. Like it's just when you're playing with small sample sizes, what happens is that what you're looking is really just false positives and false negatives, meaning what you're seeing might not actually be the case. So what if you make a decision that puts you on a completely different path, the wrong path? It could cost you tons, right? Like we test with like larger companies, not just for wins, you know. We actually have a case recently where we have a client who's rolling out a new design. The website looks so much better, absolutely, but we still have no confirmation that it's going to perform, aka make more money, better than the old design, right? Mm-hmm. So we've progressively rolled out design changes on this website, and sure, they have like 30,000 transactions a month, so they have the number. But just to quantify how, you know, what's at stake here, if they would have rolled out the design, the new design without testing, Well, they would have lost, we calculated, you know, close to $50,000 a month, you know, just for the homepage. Mm-hmm. The product page actually won. Great. But, you know, see, different parts led to different results. And if we're looking at smaller numbers and you make that decision, you know, for them, not testing or not making the wrong decision would have cost $50,000 a month. For right. you, it might be less, but it could have a similar type of impact, right? It's the wrong decision.
So if we're talking about A-B testing not being a good fit, right? And I think that's a really nice guideline you pointed out where, you know, I mean, it's kind of more or less 1,000 transactions a month.
Yep.
What would your advice be to folks in that segment, right? So, you know, okay, you're telling me don't do A-B testing. I get it. I'm convinced. Yep. So how do I do CRO?
Yeah, great question. Well, not doing A-B testing doesn't mean you can't do conversion optimization. Mm-hmm. Right? A-B testing is really a part of it. The way that I like to approach it is, of course, when you don't have data, you really have no choice. Then you have to follow some of the best practices, right? There's a lot of usability research and best practices on UX design and even copywriting that in this case, I think you should focus on applying those properly, mm-hmm. right? For example, you know, just the basics. Mm-hmm. If we look at a product page for an e-commerce store, right? Ask yourself, do people understand what the product is about, right? Do they understand the benefits of it? What questions do they have? So focus on answering your customers' questions, their doubts, their concerns. I think the best way to optimize really when you're small and don't have tons of data is to, I mean, the same way we do it with bigger clients, it's to optimize for your customer. And when you're small, what you can do is,
yes. I mean,
even if you're big, call up your clients, talk to them, survey them, just try to figure out how you can make their experience better.
Yes, yes. I mean, this is such a small point, but I just want to bring it up because I was talking to this entrepreneur earlier and he's from Egypt. And apparently on Shopify, whenever you finish an order, the postal code is a required field. So he found, and in Egypt, people don't use postal codes. So apparently people were going all the way there and then it was a required field and they didn't know their postal code. So they got scared that if they entered something random there, that the package would go somewhere else.
Oh wow!
So they didn't complete and they abandoned it. And luckily for him, they would he was pretty active on Instagram. So they messaged him saying, "Hey, like, what do I put in here?" Which is just this detail, which is just like, yep. Oh my God! Like you could have the best homepage, the best product page,
yep.
A really well designed checkout, and this one detail that you forgot is just killing all your sales. So now he's just done something really smart. He's just he changed the title or the placeholder on that text box saying write 0000 here. It's a little thing, but it's just to your point about talking to customers. I think for me, it's a bit like finding out those unknown knowns, which, you know, that's really what you're getting
so
at here,
important.
Right?
For sure. I think one of the examples, a similar example from an old client of ours, you know, when we started working with them, we noticed that they had a 15% drop in the mobile checkout. That was a bit abnormal compared to, you know, the rest of the checkout flow. And when we just looked at it and tried to see what was wrong, it really wasn't that obvious. And they had a really, really smart team of you know, e-commerce and developers, e-commerce people and developers. And they couldn't really find what the issue was with the checkout flow. But once we started looking at session recordings of people going through the flow, we noticed that for about 15% of mobile checkouts, the checkout button would simply not appear.
Oh, wow.
Right? So, you know, and the alternatives, the company was actually going to build a whole new flow because they couldn't figure out and they were like, oh, maybe it's not ideal. Well, when you actually start and looking at how your customers behave and people navigate through your site, you discover those little things that you had no idea about. Such in this case, you know, the fix was a 10-15 minute fix, and for a $30 million company, 15% of mobile checkouts is a lot.
Oh my gosh, that is so it's almost like a quick homework for everybody listening in, right? Like go talk to, it's almost like, you know, people in the consulting world, you call it low-hanging fruit. There's got to be these things which you could do a quick fix, and people are just going to find the experience so much more. Exactly. Like we could go on and on with, like, so many examples are coming to my head with customers who have told us, like, these little anecdotes. And it's amazing how varied they are. Like, it's, and so, you know, find out what your anecdote is, right? Like, go pick up the phone, talk to your customers. But, you know, this point about talking to customers, I think it's so crucial. And, you know, you work with very large brands, right? So obviously, you know, when you're at that size, you do tend to have a more formal process, right? And, you know, clearly it's a big part of CRO, because that's the way you get to know your customers more. What are some good examples, or maybe some lessons that, you know, you can talk us through for, say, smaller businesses where maybe they don't have the capacity to have a very formal process, but, you know, what are those quick wins that, you know, they can implement right now that they can hear more from their customers?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways to do this. And one of my favorites is there's a few plugins on Shopify that allows you to do that. The name is escaping me right now, but on your thank you page, you can have a post-purchase survey. So right after people make their purchase on Shopify, it pops like a survey next to the thank you confirmation message. And you can ask them about their shopping experience, you know, ask them if there was anything that was confusing or if there's anything that nearly stopped them from buying. That's a great way to just automatically get feedback on the experience. That's something that, you know, companies of any size can do. Mm-hmm. Another great thing, really, it's the easiest, is my friend Dan Martell called this the smile and dial method, which is you look at your list of customers from, you know, the past few weeks, and you randomly pick, you know, maybe five people to call. You just take your phone, you call them, you don't tell them, you know, if you're the founder, don't tell them you're the founder, just pretend you're an employee and ask them about their experience. And some of them, you know, might just hang up on you, that's fine. But the few conversations you'll have on a weekly basis will inform so much about how your customers think about your product. And also, I think even more important, what's going on in their lives, right? Because if you get to understand the context in which people decided to buy your products, you know, what type of lives they seem to live and things like that, it really helps with the angle of your marketing copy, of the design of your website, and just really relating with the customer when marketing to them.
And that is another crucial part of CRO, because now you can use the same language that your customers use, right? You know, there's this site, Weebly, and I was listening to a talk by the Weebly's founder, and he was saying how he started Weebly. I'm pretty sure I'm going to quote him wrong, so but he said something like, he started Weebly because he wanted to make it easier for everybody to make websites. And so he was like, he wanted to make it cheap. So he said something like, you know, it's a cheap, fast way to get online. And then he did this user research, and people were looking at that cheap thinking, oh, it's going to be a cheap website. This sucks. I don't want it. Which is just such a mind-blowing example of this creator who had this assumption and clearly trying to do a good thing, right? Where he's trying to make it more affordable. And then I think he changed it to something like make a website that's unique to you or something like that. That's what he said, which really spoke to it. But especially with e-commerce, like we're all creators, right? And we're trying to put something out there in the world that, you know, maybe it's, even if it's not your own product, you're trying to build a brand. There's all these assumptions that you think are correct, but maybe then that's not true from the way people perceive it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, and I've got a great example for that.
I'd love to hear it.
Well, you know, whenever you're ready, when we share screens,
Let's talk about this example, like before we go into it, you know, you wanted to take us through Primal Pit, like maybe just give us that backstory behind the brand, you know, what they came to you with and what their challenges were. And then I understand, you know, the exciting part is where we're going to jump into that screen share and have a look at their website. So take it away.
Awesome. Yeah. So there's this brand called Primal Pit Paste. When they approached us a few years ago, they, of course, wanted to increase their conversions. They were growing really fast, available in every, I think, Whole Foods and Target stores in the States. And they were also looking to re-platform to Shopify from BigCommerce and wanted to make sure that that transition and the redesign was not going to affect their sales negatively. So, you know, we worked with them for quite a long time, actually. And the example that I want to show you is part, is a homepage. And it's how we redesigned the homepage based on all the customer feedback that we've received. Just a note to the audience, the brand, you know, I think in early this year has completely renamed and rebranded. So the example they're going to see on screen is not the live website right now, but everything I'm saying still applies. And it's still one of the best examples that I have, where literally every word on that page comes from voice of customer, from qualitative research, but also quantitative research. So
amazing. Can't wait.
Awesome. Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's go ahead and share the screen.
I'll just share the screen. All right. Can you see?
Yes.
Perfect. So this is the brand's website, and this is, you know, the homepage that was redesigned for Primal Pit Paste, which, by the way, is a natural deodorant company. Now, here's one of the things we did when we started working with them. We sent existing customers a survey. The survey has about, I would say, 8 questions, all open-ended. So it wasn't multiple choices. It was, we really wanted people to be able to write their answers. We asked questions like, what made them buy? You know, what made you buy from Primal Pit Paste? How did this product make your life better? How would you describe yourself? You know, questions like that, that for some people might sound almost too open-ended, but that was the point. We really wanted to tell us about themselves and their use of the product without putting any constraints. Then we got hundreds of answers, which we classified depending on categories, and we codified. And what we found was very interesting. If we look at some of the biggest objections that people were having with the product, and by the way, we also did website polls. So on the poll, you would have, we would use Hotjar to display and ask questions about why people wouldn't buy or what questions they had on the website. We looked at analytics, chat support analysis as well. We looked at all the support tickets and looked at what questions people were asking. And what we found here is one of the biggest objections why people were hesitant to buy the product was that it was a natural deodorant and they were very active people. So we said, okay, well, a lot of people are very active. And what they're saying is that natural deodorants didn't work for them in the past. There are people that love, that want to buy everything natural, but they're very active and it just doesn't work for them if they do CrossFit workouts. We also found actually a lot of people said they were CrossFitters. Interesting. Mostly women. But again, they said, well, it might not work. And then when we, you know, dug into the problem, they said that they were worried about smelling on their day-to-day. They wanted something that was awesome. So let's look at the homepage here. What do we have? Well, let's start with the image in the background, right? We're seeing two women hugging each other in a gym. Subconsciously, this was meant to reinforce that actually people that are doing, you know, CrossFit and all are worried that this won't work. When we talk to our best customers, we're actually hearing that this is, this totally works and they're not sweating and they're not worrying anymore, even when they're working out hard. So we looked at, you know, the customers, the company persona, the persona of the customers, and obviously it was women. So we had two women hugging each other as a sign of confidence that, you know, I'm not worrying that I smell bad or anything. I'm confident even after a workout, and they're working out, meaning that this is good for workouts. So this is, you know, just based on the image so far.
Yes, amazing.
If we keep digging, let's look at the headline, smell awesome, worry less. When we ask people questions like, you know, how did this product improve your life, or how, you know, I can't remember the exact questions, but it was something around those lines. People said exact words, wow, I smell awesome now, and I don't worry as much. And when we actually started codifying and looked at which words their customers used the most in the survey responses and in the customer interviews, well, people used worry less. I don't worry as much, worry. That was the word that was used the most when it, when we looked at the benefit that people reported. And then the second, well, it was that they smelled awesome.
So did you guys take these surveys and put it in like a word cloud or something like that to get these words to come out? What was the technique you used? I'm just curious.
Yeah, great question. I wish it'd be as simple as a word cloud.
Okay,
but it was about like a full week of manual analysis. So what we do when we do qualitative analysis here is we export the data in a spreadsheet, and then we read every single answer. And then for every question, we create different categories. So let's say we're talking about benefits from the products, right? Well, people said smell awesome, worry less. Another category could be, you know, it lasts all day, it's natural. And then let's say you have four different answer types. We would go through the answers, and every single answer, then we would classify them under the right category. Then the category that has the most answers attached to it, you know, means that that's what people answered to the most. And here it was smell awesome, worry less. So that was a headline completely created out of the voice of customer that we've had in the survey results.
Awesome. Keep going.
Now, let's look at the sub headline, where long-lasting natural deodorant that actually works. When we started going through those survey answers as well, and when I say survey, it also includes like the poll answers and all the other qualitative, you know, stuff that we did. When we look at where long-lasting natural deodorant that actually works, well, we asked people, you know, why specifically Primal Pit Paste? And if we exclude, you know, the benefits they got out of it, like smell awesome and they don't worry as much, well, people said that it was long-lasting. Long-lasting was a word that was used a lot in the benefit, why people like that product. When we look at people who hadn't bought yet from the brand, and we looked at the concerns from those people, they said that they were afraid that it wasn't going to be long-lasting because it's deodorant. It's natural deodorant. Well, now you've got two opposing things. People before they buy say that they're afraid it's not long lasting. People who bought said it's amazing how long it lasts for a natural deodorant. So bam, here, you know, we just wrote this, we're long lasting natural deodorant. That was one of the major concerns. Let's write it and answer people's doubt. Is it long lasting? And then that actually works. It actually works is a funny bit because when we looked, nearly every single answer of people who had used natural deodorants in the past said that other deodorants didn't work, and this one, it actually works. So we said, well, let's just use that, right? So then that's how we created the subheadline, again, really based on the voice of customer.
And this is a huge, I think, lesson learned for everyone, right? Because, you know, when you come in, what you've done is just by using the voice of the customer, you've pretty much checked so many boxes. Like you're communicating very quickly who you are, what you do, and most importantly, why you're worth their time to look at.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
And, And now here, if we look at the call to actions, this one actually opens to a video that shows people how the products are made. And this here takes them to the best-selling deodorants.
Right.
Now, if we actually look at the quantitative data this time and would go into the analytics, we notice that people who watch the video, you know, before the redesign of the homepage, converted much better than people who didn't watch it, but just went elsewhere on the website. So we said, okay, well, it seems like the video is really helping with conversions and creating maybe that sort of attachment, because the owner of the brand would talk about the product creation process and all of that. So we featured the video here, but wanted to make it like a secondary call to action, knowing that the deodorant was where people wanted to go first, right? So this is how we picked the call to actions. We used data from Google Analytics, and we really made that decision there. Now, if we keep scrolling here, this was, you know, of course, these were things that the brand really wanted to communicate on a brand level. For them, it was about the brand values. It's about getting real and using true ingredients. But it's a fun brand. It's not just a serious brand. But they're also saying, hey, you can play, you can do whatever you want with it. You can have fun. You don't need to worry about sweating. Mm-hmm. And join your people here. This was completely for trust. Join your people. People want to have a tribe. People want to be part of something. So join your people showed that over 100,000 customers, you know, smell awesome and achieve results with this product. So it's not a brand new product. It's not something that was invented overnight. You can trust that this works.
Right.
So here, you know, really, if we look at the content, it reinforces some of the elements I've talked about from the findings of the qualitative research, right? Working out natural ingredients, zero bad stuff, and then the trust here, proving that this is not bullshit. Like, this is, you know, a legit brand. Now, if we keep going, you know, we've got a bunch of icons. These icons are really just to clarify, again, questions that people had. It was funny because no matter how many times we talked about natural, that it was a natural product, people still asked, is there any chemicals in there? Is it aluminum free? Are all the ingredients really natural and organic? Is it cruelty free? So we just really added all these items to clarify all the other little doubts that were present right here and there. So that was really, you know, the top of the homepage. Now, as we dive further, those are the products that would sell the most, right? Also notice that there's a lot of reviews for every product, right? So all these products are actually reviewed 5 stars, you know, hundreds of reviews for each. So it helps credibility. People like to buy what is proven to work, right? So, you know, if you're new to the brand and they have, let's say, 10 different types of deodorants, you're not sure which one to buy, well, at least, you know, those are the best sellers. So you probably won't go wrong with those. So this is why, you know, we featured the best selling products there. And then finally, we just dove into a bit more into the ingredients that people were asking about, and then other product categories, and then some of the testimonials from health experts to, you know, really push that credibility once again. These were all, when we asked people, you know, what blogs they read, and where they got, you know, their health news. Those are, you know, a lot of the influencers that were mentioned. So we wanted to add more credibility again by using those quotes from health experts, and then user-generated content to bring a sense of community. And then here, you know, media logos just to push on that even further.
So really very strategic trust symbols in the form of very finely tuned copy and sort of social proof as well, right? I think especially I really liked how you put a lot of emphasis into copy. I think it's one of those areas which don't get enough attention these days, where everyone's like trying to look for something really, really fancy when, you know, words can really sell.
Absolutely. And I forgot to mention, the results of this was actually a 21% increase in conversions. And when I say conversions here, I mean sales. So let's be precise. That was a lot of money for the brand. So as you can imagine, there is value in doing this type of work and just really working to understand your customer. That's, at the end of the day, if we distill all of this, all we did is we seek to really understand the customer and we built something that was a reflection of them.
And this is exactly something which, even if you're on a low budget, you can already start doing in a very small scale. I'm going to kill the share screen and then come back to the chat. But I think that's, for me, one of the most useful things about what we just talked about, right? Like, it's like, maybe people listening in might be thinking, okay, I don't have a lot of social proof. I don't have 500 reviews. No. That's okay. You can look at that copy which, you know, you put in the headline. One of the things which I've learned in terms of homepage design is that there is so much value in saying no to putting something on the homepage than saying yes. I think there's, especially when you're just starting out, there's this tendency where you feel like, oh, but I want to say this and this and this and this.
Yep.
Whereas instead, it seems like curation really is the name of the game rather than adding everything. Yep.
Oh, this is so true. I think, and it's an issue at every level of a company. When you're a smaller size company, often you just want to make sure that people know about everything you do and everything you sell. It's often a mistake, because if you're not relevant enough to one type of customer, you're probably not relevant to anyone. If you're trying to target everyone, you know, your message just gets diluted and then no one will know if it's actually for them.
Right.
Exactly. So that's an issue. The bigger companies, well, then they get another type of issue where, well, very often the same reasons, but sometimes it's just a department is fighting against another to, you know, have all their different messages on the homepage. So then you've got people advertising this product and another product, another product category, five different messages at the same time. And again, if your homepage doesn't all flow and the content doesn't build on top of each other and they're all fighting against each other, you're just diluting the message, confusing the user, and you know, people won't be able to retain any type of information they're seeing on there.
Yeah, but it does create a very interesting question with that point, right? Because I think when you're small, you have that luxury of focus. Yep. And then you know even with, say, bigger brands that tend to be very focused, like in this case, it's almost like, I would say, a luxury where you say, look, we are a deodorant brand. But at some point in a brand's lifestyle, I think even small ones, where say you're doing a marketplace, you just happen to have very different products. I mean, a very small example would be, you know, someone who's selling perhaps baby items. And then you've got so many different types of customer segments. You've got maybe these, you know, soon to be moms. You've got people coming for, like, shopping for baby showers. You've got people who've got a 6 month old, a 12 month old. Very different kind of messages, very different kind of things. How do you deal with that? You know, comparing that to what we just talked about here, where you have to keep it really simple.
So my trick for this is, if you really have too many different types of customers and products that needs, you know, a spotlight of their own, is, well, instead of just like running ads to one page where you've got all your content, create landing pages, right? You can have, and it's just have different landing pages for your different customer types or different customer segments, and for your, or for your different types of products, right? Whatever you feel that can be grouped together, I would say, you know, you don't need to send everyone to the same page and communicate everything at once. Just be a bit more strategic with who you're sending to which page. And, you know, it can be done with personalization as well. There's a lot of ways to do it, but my advice is try to split the focus, right? Show them something. If you can, send them to a unique landing page or personalize the messaging so a bit more unique, do that. But yeah, there's no really valid excuse for sending everyone of, you know, to all the same pages all the time.
I mean, you mentioned personalization, but and you made a really good point before that about the landing page, where anyone with this problem doesn't really need to invest in something like personalization, because that's, I think, you know, sort of maybe if you can prove that this works, then yes, you can go into something more advanced. But like this landing page idea, you can do like right now. You could just go ahead and like copy the, and that I think is sort of, I hope that's sort of another takeaway, because everybody listening in, there's so many ways that you can apply what Rafael's been talking about. And if you do have this issue where you're thinking, you know what, I can't be focused because I have so many people who have, then, you know, just like what he said, build these landing pages and focus it on different people. And I bet that really helps you with your SEO too, because then if people are looking for your brand and sort of usage, I mean, Google's already smart enough to put that landing page that you built as a first result, and people are going to be like, huh, this looks like it's for me, right?
Exactly.
Rafael, this has been a very, very informative conversation, I have to say. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. I absolutely loved it. So thanks for the great conversation.
Right? You're most welcome. You're still here, which means you definitely enjoyed that conversation. This is a special COVID-19 e-commerce mini-series to help small business merchants out there get prepared. We're doing a lot more of these, so be the first to know whenever there's a new episode. Just follow DataCue, that's DataCue, on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn. Stay safe out there, everybody. Till next time, this is Sharam,